8:59 a.m., August 19, 2025. Tallahassee. The bailiff called the room to order, and the judge took the bench. 12 jurors and 2 alternates settled in. The state rose first. Prosecutors said this was a murder born in a family fight over children and control. They promised jurors a trail of calls, money, and recorded words that would show agreement and intent. The defense answered that there was no direct order, no command from Donna, only talk and the actions of others. The jury learned this case began years earlier, yet the defendant was arrested in November 2023 at Miami International Airport while preparing to fly to Vietnam. The judge reminded everyone that the verdict must rest on what comes from the witness stand and the exhibits, nothing else. Then the first witness was sworn, and the work of sorting motive from proof began. Chapter 1, Sworn and Seated. 9 a.m., August 19, 2025. Leon County Courthouse in Tallahassee. The clerk called the case. The judge took the bench. 12 jurors and 2 alternates faced the well. The defendant sat with counsel at the defense table. Reporters filled the back rows. Family members sat quiet and still. The judge confirmed the jury had been sworn. He reminded them their verdict must rest only on testimony and exhibits. No outside research. No discussion until deliberations. Dates and names would matter. So would the difference between what someone said and what someone proved. The charges were read in open court. First-degree murder. Conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Solicitation to commit first-degree murder. The judge noted the presumption of innocence and the state's burden to prove each element beyond a reasonable doubt. The jury nodded. The court moved to opening statements. The prosecutor stood first. He told jurors this case reached back to a family dispute that began before July 2014. He said the victim, Dan Markell, a law professor and father, was shot in his garage in Tallahassee on July 18, 2014. Proven, Markell was killed that morning. Allegation: the defendant joined an agreement that led to the killing. He drew a line on a poster board that ran from a divorce and a custody fight to coded talk, phone traffic, travel, and money. He said the evidence would show planning and pressure from inside the family. He said jurors would see how a conspiracy can be built from calls, meetings, and actions that fit together like parts of a clock. He told them they would not hear a direct order on a recording. He said they would see a plan anyway. He previewed the undercover bump in 2016. An agent approached a family member. The move triggered calls and a meeting at a Miami restaurant. The state said jurors would hear how the words, the timing, and the reactions pointed back to the same agreement. Allegation: those reactions were not fear of extortion alone. Allegation: they were signs of a plan under strain. He pointed to a second timeline that ran forward to an arrest at Miami International Airport in November 2023. The state said the defendant was stopped at the gate with a one-way ticket to Vietnam. Proven: the arrest happened and the tickets existed. Allegation: those steps showed intent to flee because of guilt. The judge told the jury, again, that opening statements are not evidence. The prosecutor agreed and sat down. The defense stood. Counsel started with the same rules. The burden does not shift. The state must prove an agreement, an intent, and acts that move the plan forward. Counsel said there would be no message, no email, no recording where the defendant ordered a murder. He said the state would ask jurors to fill gaps with feelings. He said gaps are not proof. He addressed the 2016 encounter. He said third parties used pressure and rumor to squeeze the family. He said what looked like coded talk was fear and confusion. He said the meeting in Miami was not a confession. He said it was damage control after strangers in sunglasses walked up and hinted at danger. Allegation from the defense: the family faced an extortion scheme after the killing. The defendant shook her head when the state's chart labeled her as director. The jury watched her face and looked back at the screen. He turned to the 2023 airport arrest. He said travel is not a crime. He said the state would ask jurors to read mind and motive into a set of tickets. He said the trip had family reasons. He said fear of a media wave is not proof of murder. He asked the jury to wait for evidence that shows who called whom, who paid whom, and who said what, not what the state believes those acts mean. The judge gave a short instruction on allegation versus proven facts. Proven, a man is dead. Proven, the defendant was arrested on a warrant. Proven, other people have been tried and convicted in related cases. Not proven in this trial unless evidence shows it here. The defendant agreed to kill, paid to kill, or ordered anyone to kill. The court called the first witness. The court clerk swore the witness. The prosecutor began with foundation. Name. Title. Duties. A map of Tallahassee went up. The witness pointed to the neighborhood where the shooting took place. He marked the path of the first responders. He named the time of the first call. He marked the time of the first officer on scene. Proven facts anchored the start of the timeline. The jury took notes. On cross, the defense made the point that the witness had never met the defendant before the investigation. The witness agreed. The defense asked if the witness had a recording where the defendant gave an order. The witness said no. The defense sat down. The point landed, but the day had just started. A detective took the stand and walked jurors through the basic family tree. He explained how the case touched multiple cities. Tallahassee for the crime. South Florida for many of the calls and meetings. He used call charts to show traffic on key dates. The state did not argue what the calls meant yet. It laid the sequence. Numbers. Times. Durations. The jury followed the arrows. The defense pressed again on cross. The detective agreed that a call by itself does not prove a crime. He agreed that many calls in a family can be about ordinary life. He agreed that people can talk about money for reasons that have nothing to do with murder. He did not agree that the sequence was random. He held to the view that the pattern mattered, but he also said the jurors must decide. Late morning, the court admitted a limited set of photos and a crime scene diagram. The judge warned the jury to use them for timeline and location only. There would be no disturbing images beyond what was necessary to understand the route and the times. The state moved on. The defense did not object. The prosecutor previewed testimony still ahead. The jury would hear from family. They would hear from agents who worked the 2016 operation. They would hear about travel searches and cash. He said the point was not one piece. He said the point was how the pieces aligned. Allegation. The alignment came from a plan made inside the family and carried out by others. The defense answered with a preview of its own. It would call witnesses who would say the defendant managed family matters, not violent schemes. It would show the limits of the call charts. It would bring out contradictions. It would press the state's witnesses on bias and memory. It would ask the court to instruct on conspiracy law. It would argue that fear and gossip are not agreement. After the lunch break, the judge returned to the bench and thanked the jurors for their attention. He reminded them to keep an open mind until all evidence was in. He told them to avoid news coverage and conversations. The clerk called the next witness. The tempo settled. Question. Answer. Exhibit. Objection. Sustained. Overruled. The slow work of proof continued. By late afternoon, the court had fixed the calendar. The week would include family testimony. The following week would bring agents and analysts. Closing arguments would come only after both sides rested. The judge repeated the elements of conspiracy. There must be an agreement to commit a crime. The defendant must have known and intended to join it. There must be an act in furtherance of the plan. The jury wrote the elements down. The day ended with a simple instruction. Do not discuss the case. Do not look anything up. Report back in the morning. The jurors stood and filed out. The parties gathered their binders. The judge left the bench. The deputy locked the evidence cart. The quiet that follows a long court day settled in the room. Outside, the steps of the courthouse filled with cameras and questions. Inside, the record held only what the jury had heard and seen. Proven facts sat in the exhibits. Allegations waited in opening statements for support. When court resumed, the case would move from charts and calendars to voices and memories. The central question did not change. What evidence, if any, will link the defendant to agreement, payment, or command? Chapter 2, The Why. The jury needed a clean frame before the stream of exhibits. The court stepped back to the years before the murder. The divorce was final in July 2013. Two young children. Split time. New rules. New limits. Every schedule change felt like a struggle. There was a fight over where the children would live. The mother wanted to move to South Florida. The father fought the move. A judge denied relocation. The order held. The children stayed in Tallahassee. that ruling sat at the center of many later arguments. Emails from the years that followed showed strain inside the family. Plans. Frustration. Talk about how to fix a life split between two cities. Prosecutors told jurors that the messages captured motive. They said the grandmother pressed for a way to bring the daughter and grandson's home to Miami. They said the pressure never eased. The state listed the steps of a custody war. Motions. Hearings. Pickups and drop-offs. New partners. Old resentments. The father held a faculty job at Florida State. He taught classes and wrote. He also filed papers and sought orders to keep the children in Tallahassee. The court record showed how often the case returned to the same question. Who decides where the children live? The mother's wish to move was not a secret. Friends knew. Lawyers knew. The grandparents knew. The courtroom heard that an email suggested a large cash offer to settle the relocation fight. The figure was high. The plan on paper was simple. Pay for permission to move south. It never happened. The ruling stood. Proven facts came next. The father was shot on July 18, 2014. He died the next day. He was targeted in his own driveway. Two men from South Florida did it. One later pled guilty. One was convicted. A woman linked to both men was convicted. Years later, the mother's brother was convicted. He is serving life. Those points came in as context already on the record. The jury still had to decide this case on its own proof. The state said motive tied the threads together. It did not say motive alone proves a crime. It said motive helps make sense of calls, travel, and meetings. It said the push to move, the court loss, and the years of pressure set the stage. The story, as told by the prosecution, ran like a fuse from family need to criminal plan. The defense met that claim head on. It agreed the divorce was bitter. It agreed the relocation fight was real. It agreed the emails showed stress. It said none of that equals agreement to kill. It said the most charged lines were talk, not orders. It said people write things they never act on. It said the court should not change speech into conspiracy. Jurors saw a short timeline slide. July 2013, divorce final. The same year and the next, the family went back and forth in court over timesharing and travel. The relocation ruling stayed in force. Then July 2014, the shooting. After that, grief, fear, and blame. The timeline did not decide intent. It only placed events in order. The state highlighted the burden of daily distance. School events missed. Doctors in another city. Grandparents who wanted close contact, but lived 5 hours away by car. It argued that the desire to fix that distance grew into resolve. It argued that resolve grew into a plan to remove the obstacle. That obstacle was the father and the court order that stood behind him. The defense said the state was stretching family pain into a plot. It said the mother had a life to rebuild and two children to raise under court limits. It said the grandmother had strong views and a sharp tongue, but she stayed inside family roles. It said there was no recorded plan where the grandmother told anyone to find a killer. It said the state was asking the jury to read criminal intent into normal, if heated, family talk. The court then tied the past to the trial. The judge reminded the jury to separate motive evidence from proof of the charged crimes. Jurors could hear about the divorce and the relocation fight to understand context. They still needed evidence of agreement and intent to convict. The instruction was short. The point was clear. Witnesses filled in more detail. A former partner described the pressure the mother felt. He said the family disliked the father. He said the mother once joked about a hitman. He also said people say foolish things when angry. The state used the line to show mindset. The defense used the same line to show how words can drift far from action. A family law filing surfaced to ground the legal side. It confirmed the relocation loss. It showed how much time the parents spent arguing over travel, school, and bills. It showed the tone of the fight long before any undercover move or restaurant tape. That paperwork had no killers in it. It had no cash handoffs in it. It had only a stalemate that touched each week of family life. By late afternoon, the jury had a picture of a family pulled in two. Parents who could not agree. Grandparents who wanted the children near them. Court orders that set the frame and held to it. The father's death removed the legal barrier and opened the way to a move south. That is a hard fact. The question in this courtroom is how that death came to be. Prosecutors closed the chapter with a plain claim. Desire turned to intent. Intent moved to agreement. Agreement led to action. They said the proof of that chain would arrive through calls, money, and recorded reactions. They asked the jury to hold the motive in mind while weighing each next piece. The defense closed with a different chain. Desire is not crime. Anger is not intent. Family talk is not agreement. It said the state would show noise and ask for a verdict. It told jurors to wait for a clear link from the grandmother to a plan. Chapter 3, The Bump and the Restaurant. April 2016, South Florida. The undercover move began in an ordinary parking area on a warm morning. An agent approached with a plain piece of paper and a simple demand for money. The amount was $5,000. The message pointed to the years-old murder and hinted at pressure to pay. Proven in court was the approach itself. Proven was the request for $5,000. Proven were the next phone calls that lit up within minutes. Records showed times and durations with no argument about their accuracy. The goal of the operation, as the agent explained, was to start real conversations. Jurors watched the agent take the oath and sit straight in the witness chair. He told them his name and role. He said the team planned the contact for days. He said they chose a place where a short conversation would not draw attention. He described the flyer as a prop that would not frighten bystanders. He walked the jury through the sequence. He approached. He delivered the line. He handed over the paper that asked for $5,000 to help the family of a man already in prison. He left the area without further words. He did not make threats. He did not mention the police. He did not ask for names. He stepped away and signaled the surveillance team. The prosecutor kept his questions tight. What time did the approach happen? Where did the agent stand? How close was he? What did he say? The answers came with steady cadence. The agent said the script was short and careful. He said the intent was to prompt follow-up calls, not to gather confessions during the contact. He said the team expected phones to ring. On the screens, jurors saw a call chart pop to life. The line for the first number jumped. A new line rose for a second number. Each block showed a start time and duration. The chart did not show content. It showed only traffic. The state told jurors to watch the timestamps. The defense did not dispute the logs. The numbers were what they were. Proven were the times and the sequence. Proven was the burst that followed the approach. The state said the pattern mattered. The defense said patterns can mislead. The judge reminded the jury that charts are tools. Meaning would come, if at all, from witness testimony that linked the lines to acts in the real world. Cross-examination began. Defense counsel stood beside the lectern and held the flyer in a clear sleeve. He asked if the agent mentioned police. The agent said no. He asked if the agent suggested violence. The agent said no. He asked if the agent told any person to meet at a specific place. The agent said no. He asked if the agent recorded the approach. The agent said the team recorded video from a distance and logged times in real time. Counsel changed lanes. He asked about the theory behind such an approach. The agent said the move was meant to generate new conversations that could be recorded or observed. Counsel asked if this looked like a shakedown. The agent said no. He said the request was designed not to threaten, but to press on a sensitive point. Counsel asked if the amount, $5,000, was chosen to be believable. The agent said yes. He said it needed to be large enough to be real, but not so large that it would scare a person into silence. The prosecutor rose again for a short redirect. He asked if the target of the approach was accused of a crime at that moment. The agent said no. He asked if the goal was to see who would call whom. The agent said yes. He asked if the team expected a meeting to follow. The agent said yes. The jurors watched the screen with the call chart still in view. The pacing stayed deliberate. The next witness was the analyst who handled the phone records. She detailed how providers deliver call detail records. She explained how towers and sectors can place a phone in a general area. She drew a line from the approach to the spike in calls. She did not guess at words. She did not claim mind reading. She described patterns. She said sudden bursts after a trigger event often reflect coordination. She said it can also reflect fear. She nodded when the prosecutor asked if either interpretation is possible without content. On cross, the defense walked her through the limits again. She agreed that people call family when they are worried. She agreed that an odd encounter can cause a person to reach out. She agreed that a cluster of calls can be about safety. She agreed that a cluster can be about gossip. She held, however, to the idea that timing matters in any serious investigation. Jurors wrote notes, then looked up. The state then shifted to the restaurant. It put on a detective who managed the covert recording the following week at a Miami Beach spot known for sidewalk tables and a steady lunch crowd. Proven was the existence of the recording. Proven were the date and time of the meeting. Proven was the presence of two people who spoke in careful terms. The district attorney did not play the entire video. He played selected clips the court had admitted. The judge had already ruled on what the jury could hear. The screen showed two figures seated across a small table. Cars slid past curbside. Glasses clinked. The audio was not clean at first. Voices rose above the street noise, then dipped. Jurors listened without moving. The prosecutor paused the track now and then. He asked the detective to read short lines that were hard to hear. He asked the detective to mark the moments that mattered. The detective marked worry about someone talking. He marked references to money. He marked phrases about taking care of things. The prosecutor asked what was proven. Proven was that the two people met. Proven was that they spoke in guarded terms. Proven was that the meeting followed the approach by days, not months. The prosecutor asked what was not proven. Not proven in that clip was any direct order to harm anyone. Not proven was any full name tied to a command. The detective agreed with both points. The prosecutor left the answers standing. He did not push beyond the record. Then the case turned to the process used to enhance the audio. An expert in audio processing testified next. She described how she lifted street noise away from the main band where voices sat. She kept the language simple. She said she did not add words. She said she did not guess. She said she amplified frequencies that already existed. She documented the steps so another lab could repeat them. The jury heard the short before and after segments. The difference was real. Consonants surfaced. Pauses cleared. The content did not change. The clarity did. The defense pressed hard on this witness. Counsel asked if the expert ever misheard a syllable. She said that is possible. He asked if expectation can color a listener's mind. She said yes. He asked if she knew the case background when she worked. She said she knew the date, location, and names, but not the whole history. He asked if she met with the state before testifying. She said yes. He asked if the meeting could shape how she heard the track. She said her method guards against bias, but she agreed that human hearing can drift. The jurors watched her face as she conceded the human point. The prosecutor followed with a linguistics professor who studies coded speech. He taught jurors a few simple tools. People lower their voice when risk rises. They switch to nicknames. They use verbs that blur duties. He called that diffusion. He said diffusion is common when people know they are close to a line. He said diffusion can also appear in families that dislike direct talk about ugly themes. He offered both options. He did not tell the jury which one to choose. He told them to look for clusters. He told them to look for timing. He told them to look for money. The defense cross was sharp. Counsel asked if coded speech exists in legal crises that are not criminal. The professor said yes. Counsel asked if fear of extortion could produce the same patterns. The professor said yes. Counsel asked if the professor could testify that the speakers were engaged in a murder plot. The professor said no. He said he could only teach tools and show patterns. He said the jury must match patterns to the facts. After lunch, the detective returned to Phil and logistics. He talked about the distance between the parking area where the approach occurred and the restaurant where the meeting took place. He showed how the team planned surveillance routes to avoid detection. He explained why the location helped capture usable audio. Indoor rooms can echo. Sidewalk tables create noise. The team placed microphones within legal limits to catch the lines that jurors now heard. The prosecutor then pointed to a small set of words that the state claimed revealed more than worry about gossip. The speakers discussed whether someone had been contacted. They spoke about who might be next. They raised the idea of keeping a person quiet. The detective said the speakers were not talking about public relations. He said they were talking about exposure that could ruin lives and send people to prison. Allegation from the state was clear. The speakers were protecting a plan, not handling a rumor. The defense had a different frame ready. It said the speakers were terrified by strangers who appeared in a parking area and mentioned prison. It said the $5,000 request looked like a shakedown. It said the restaurant meeting was damage control. It said the coded lines were fear, not planning. It said people who feel hunted choose careful words. It said careful words do not prove conspiracy. The jurors listened to both frames without showing any lean. The judge delivered a limiting instruction before the clips ended. He told the jury that the recording was admitted for what it showed and what it did not show. He said they could not consider the clip as evidence of the character of any person. He said they must focus on the words, the timing, and the reasonable inferences they could draw. He said they must not guess at words they did not hear. He told them to rely on their own ears. He told them to use the transcript only as an aid, not as proof of content. The state tied the two events together with a timeline that left little room for drift. The approach happened. Calls followed. A meeting took place. New calls bridged the gaps. The state said this was not a random string. It said this was pressure moving through a plan. It said the plan already existed. It said the plan was under stress. It said the recording captured the stress. The defense countered with a lawful alternative. It said the approach manufactured the stress. It said the operation created the timeline that the state now held up as suspicious. It said the team pushed a family into a meeting by raising a specter of danger. It said the chart now looked like a setup, not a window onto a secret. It asked jurors to hold the state to proof beyond a reasonable doubt on every element. The jury then heard about the follow-up steps. Investigators checked bank activity around the dates of the approach and the lunch. They looked for sudden withdrawals. They looked for cash movements. They looked for transfers that lined up with contact from the agent. Proven in this chapter was the method. Proven was the fact of the checks. What the numbers meant would come in later testimony. The state promised the strands would meet. The defense promised they would not. Near day's end, the prosecutor replayed one short segment. The speakers circled the idea of whether someone would keep quiet. They worried about what had been said. They touched on money, then backed away. The prosecutor asked the detective to explain why that loop mattered. He said people back away from lines when they know a microphone might exist somewhere. He said people who discuss errands do not keep stepping to an edge and then pulling back. The defense objected to the last sentence. The judge sustained. The detective rephrased. He said the loop raised questions. He left the conclusion to the jury. The defense used its last minutes to stress something basic. The recording did not include the defendant's voice. Not one line in the lunch recording carried her accent or phrasing. The prosecutor agreed. The state did not claim otherwise. The defense then asked the detective if the recorded speakers could have been talking about a different problem. The detective said the context pointed to the murder case. The defense asked if that was an opinion. He said it was. The point landed. The jury wrote more notes. When court broke, the judge told the jury to ignore any news. He told them to talk to no one. He told them to rest. He said the next day would bring the people who handled the money charts and the travel records. He said the case would move next from voices to paper. The jurors stood and filed out. In the hallway, lawyers spoke in low tones. Inside the well, the recording equipment clicked off and the room went quiet. The day's evidence did not decide anything alone. It did what it was designed to do. It forced the room to look at what people say when fear enters a conversation and time begins to matter. The state believed the fear came from a plan under threat. The defense believed the fear came from strangers pressing on a family that felt hunted. The jurors would choose which story fit the lines on the chart and the words caught by a hidden microphone under a busy sky. Meaning stayed at the center. Do reactions and careful words amount to agreement or only suspicion? Chapter 4, Family on the Stand. 10:24 a.m., August 25, 2025. Tallahassee. The clerk called the first witness of the morning. Wendy Adelson took the stand. She swore the oath and sat with her hands folded. Jurors leaned forward. The prosecutor began with short questions and clear dates. Wendy confirmed the divorce was final in July 2013. She confirmed the relocation request to move the children to South Florida. She confirmed a judge denied that move. Proven were the filings and orders. Proven was the denial. What it meant for motive and plan would be argued. The prosecutor kept the pace steady. He turned to family roles. He asked who made decisions about daily life. He asked who tended to press for action when a problem arose. Wendy described a mother who liked details, who checked in often, who shared strong opinions. She did not agree that this meant there was a crime. She said families push and pull in hard seasons. She said she wanted peace and a plan that kept the children stable. He moved to email traffic. He showed messages with dates and times that matched spikes in the custody fight. He asked Wendy to read plain lines about money and moving. She read them. He asked if the family explored a large payment to resolve relocation. She said a figure was discussed in talk and messages. She said it did not happen. Proven were the messages. Proven was the figure on a screen. Allegation from the state was that such talk showed pressure that later turned criminal. The defense objected to the last phrasing. The judge reminded the jury that questions and answers are not findings. He told counsel to stay inside the record. The prosecutor asked the core question. Were you involved in any plan to harm Dan Markell? Wendy said no. He asked if she ever recruited anyone. She said no. He asked if her mother ever ordered her to help find people who would carry out a killing. She said no. He asked if she ever heard her mother direct her brother to do it. She said no. Proven was the denial. The meaning of the denial was for the jury to decide. He shifted to the morning of the shooting. Wendy walked through her day with times and places. She described the call when she learned something had happened. She described fear and confusion. The prosecutor did not show graphic evidence. He kept the focus on sequence. Proven were calls and locations from her phone and car records. Proven were the times. He did not ask her to relive wounds beyond what the law required. Then came the questions about the undercover approach in 2016. Wendy agreed she learned about a stranger handing a family member a paper that asked for money. She agreed there was worry. She agreed people called each other that day. She did not agree that worry equals guilt. She said fear of threats can make anyone cautious. She said the family felt exposed and watched. The prosecutor asked about the Miami restaurant meeting a few days later. He asked if Wendy attended. She said no. He asked if she recognized voices from the clip that jurors had heard in the prior chapter. She identified one voice as her brother. She did not identify the other in the room. She said the talk sounded like people in trouble. She said it did not sound like people ordering a new crime. The prosecutor left her answer standing. He turned to the next exhibit. After a brief break, cross-examination began. Defense counsel stood a few feet from the jury rail. He kept his voice even. He asked if Wendy had ever been charged. She said no. He asked if she had been promised anything in exchange for her testimony. She said she was here under subpoena and would follow the law. He asked if she had reason to protect her mother. She said she wanted the truth. He asked if she had reason to protect herself. She said she had nothing to hide. Counsel turned to bias and memory. He asked if years of public scrutiny could shape how a witness tells a story. She said the facts were the facts. He asked if anger at an ex can color words in emails. She said people write poor lines when upset. He asked if her mother ever told her to stay quiet about anything illegal. She said no. He asked if she ever told her mother that a move to South Florida would be worth any cost. She said no. He asked if she ever joked about a hitman. She said she once made a terrible joke after the killing that she regretted. She said it did not reflect intent. The jury wrote notes. Redirect was short. The prosecutor asked if the court's relocation ruling stayed in effect until the day of the shooting. Wendy said yes. He asked if the death changed the path for the children. She said yes. He did not push beyond that point. He thanked her and sat down. The judge excused the witness for now. In the afternoon, the court called Robert Adelson. He raised his right hand and swore to tell the truth. He walked to the stand and sat. The prosecutor asked simple background. Age. Relationship to the parties. Where he had lived in recent years. He asked if Robert had stayed close to the family. Robert said he had been estranged at times. He said that did not change what he knew about the way the household ran when he was younger. The prosecutor asked about roles. Robert said his mother liked to be in charge of details. He said she managed schedules and gave advice on problems large and small. He said she stayed involved in her children's choices well into adulthood. He used the word controlling. He said she made decisions and expected others to follow. He did not say he heard her order a killing. He did not say he heard her hire anyone. He spoke about patterns in a family. The prosecutor asked whether Robert had ever heard his mother talk about moving the children to South Florida. He said yes. He said it came up many times. He said it mattered a great deal in the house. He said the denied move was a constant source of tension. He said people blamed the court orders for stress they felt each week. He did not elevate those feelings into direct crime. He described mood and habit. The prosecutor asked about the period after the undercover approach. Robert said the family was jumpy. He said people were worried about strangers and money. He said it felt like danger was close. He did not claim to know what had been done years before. He described how people acted when they felt pressure. On cross, defense counsel moved to the front edge of the well. He asked how long Robert had been estranged. Robert gave a range in years. Counsel asked if the distance shaped his view. Robert said it gave him space. Counsel asked if it gave him resentment. Robert said he had mixed feelings. Counsel asked if he had read news coverage over the years. Robert said yes. Counsel asked if stories in the news can blend with memory. Robert said they can, which is why he tried to answer from what he lived. Counsel drilled down on the word controlling. He asked if a parent who manages details is the same as a criminal mastermind. Robert said no. He asked if Robert ever saw his mother hand cash to a killer. Robert said no. He asked if Robert ever overheard his mother order a hit. Robert said no. He asked if Robert believed his mother to be capable of such an act. Robert said the jury would have to decide based on evidence. He said his belief was not the same as proof. Counsel then addressed bias against the state's theory. He asked if Robert was estranged from his brother. Robert said yes. He asked if that estrangement might make him more likely to believe bad things about the family. Robert said he was trying to tell the truth about roles and tone, not about who pulled a trigger. Counsel thanked him and sat down. The judge watched both witnesses closely during the day. At one point, he reminded everyone to hold emotions. He told the jury to focus on testimony and exhibits only. He reminded counsel to keep questions within the rules of evidence. He kept the pace even. The room settled into the rhythm of a long trial day. Back on redirect, the prosecutor asked Robert about a phrase the state had used in openings. He asked if his mother often said the family needed to take control of a problem. Robert said yes. He said she used action words. He said she made lists and demanded follow-through. He did not claim those words referred to violence. He said the words set a tone that shaped how others felt. The prosecutor left it there. The state then used both witnesses to explain how family messages can carry weight beyond their wording. It put up a short chart with dates. It showed a climb in messages during key disputes. It showed calls that lined up with court defeats. It did not ask the jury to treat the chart as a confession. It asked the jury to consider how pressure builds in a house over years. The defense responded that stress is not crime. The point was not contested. The meaning remained in play. Near day's end, the prosecutor asked for two admissions about basic facts. Proven were the following. Wendy and Robert testified on the record. Wendy denied involvement. Robert described a mother who liked to direct details and people. Neither witness placed the defendant in a direct order to commit a murder. The court accepted those points as the precise state of the evidence for that day. For the final minutes, the defense used Wendy's return to the stand to press the extortion theme. Counsel asked if she had heard that third parties tried to squeeze the family for money after the killing. She said she had heard that claim. He asked if fear of such a squeeze could make a person react with caution and coded talk. She said yes. The prosecutor objected to the form and noted that Wendy had not attended the restaurant meeting. The judge allowed the limited question and reminded the jury about the difference between belief and proof. The judge ended the session with careful instructions. Jurors must not discuss the case. Jurors must not seek out information. Jurors must weigh the credibility of each witness. They may consider possible bias. They may consider memory and motive. They must keep allegations separate from proven fact until a verdict is reached. The jurors nodded. The deputy ushered them out. Counsel packed up binders and exhibits. The defendant sat still as the room emptied. Outside, lights from cameras traced patterns on the courthouse steps. Inside, the record now held the voices of two children speaking about their mother, their brother, and a fight that had pulled a family in too long before a shot was fired. The chapter's work was not to decide if those voices were right. The work was to give the jury enough ground to test what people say when loyalty and law meet at a witness chair. The question grew sharper. How should jurors weigh family testimony when memory carries years of strain, and when love or distance can tilt a view by a few degrees? The answer would not come from a single line. It would come from how the lines met the paper and the calls and the money that the next witnesses would describe. The day closed on that pivot. Proven were two voices, sworn and recorded. Allegation from the state was that their words, taken with other strands, would show a plan. Allegation from the defense was that their words showed only a hard family under a bright light. The jury would keep both frames in mind as the case moved from lived rooms to ledgers. Chapter 5, Detectives and the Paper Trail. 9:12 a.m., August 26, 2025. Tallahassee. the state called its first investigator of the day. He set a binder on the witness stand and raised his right hand. The jury watched him swear in. The prosecutor began with simple ground. Name. Unit. Years on the job. Role on the case. He said his team gathered phone records, bank activity, and travel data. He explained how a conspiracy case often grows from small, ordinary things. Calls at odd times. Cash pulled in bursts. Tickets bought after key events. He said no single item decides intent. He said patterns do. He walked the jury through call detail records. Each entry had two times. Start and end. Each entry had two numbers. Origin and destination. He pointed to a spike on the day of the undercover approach in South Florida. Proven were the times and durations. Proven was the order. He did not speak about content. He spoke about sequence. Next came tower maps. He said a tower sector does not place a person on a doorstep. It draws a wedge of coverage. He used a simple map. He marked a phone near a restaurant the week after the approach. He marked a related phone in the same sector. Proven was the overlap. Allegation from the state was that the people behind those numbers were moving and speaking in sync. The defense stood for cross. Counsel asked if tower data can bounce. The detective said yes. Weather. Load. Terrain. Counsel asked if a phone inside a car can connect to a different tower than a phone on a sidewalk. The detective said yes. Counsel asked if tower wedges are rough. The detective said yes. Counsel asked if tower maps can prove a person's exact words. The detective said no. He said the maps only place devices in an area. The state moved to bank records. Another detective took the stand. She handled subpoenas and spreadsheets. She said she pulled statements for accounts tied to people named in the case. She said she marked cash withdrawals and deposits around key dates. She said she compared those dates to the call spikes. She showed a short chart. Withdrawal here. Call storm there. Deposit next. Proven were the numbers. Proven were the dates. Allegation from the state was that money moved as talk moved. She explained how they followed cash. Banks record withdrawals. Stores record purchases when cards are used. Cameras watch lobbies and drive-through lanes. She said they pulled images where the law allowed. The jury saw still frames that matched the date of a flagged withdrawal. The person in the photo was identified by later testimony. The defense did not object to the identification already in the record from prior proceedings. The judge reminded the jury to use the image for time and act only. Cross came fast. Defense counsel asked about routine needs. Rent. School. Groceries. Travel. He asked if cash can leave an account for any normal reason. She said yes. He asked if two events can line up by accident. She said yes. He asked if she could prove what cash bought. She said not always. She said the point was timing and repetition. She said one pair does not prove anything. She said a series can point to a plan. The prosecutor called a fraud analyst. He spoke about checks, transfers, and memo lines. He said people who fear paper trails often use cash. He also said people slip and write a note that reveals a purpose. He showed a redacted image of a check already admitted in a related trial. The memo line was blank. The analyst said blanks can hide the reason. He said blanks are also common. He warned the jury not to overread a single field. He told them to watch the pattern again. The defense followed with questions on bias. Counsel asked if the analyst worked only for the state. He said yes. Counsel asked if he viewed the data through the lens of guilt. He said he used the same lens he would use in any source and application case. He said the method mattered more than the outcome. He said another analyst could repeat his steps and get the same result. Late morning, the court returned to the week in 2016. A lead detective walked through three calls that followed the undercover approach. He had logs. He had times. He had who dialed whom. He did not play recordings of those calls. He said the clips jurors would hear later were from other moments. The point in this block was traffic. Proven was that the phones came alive at tight intervals after the approach. Allegation was that the heat came from a plan under strain. On cross, the defense put the human frame on the same pattern. Counsel asked if a family that feels hunted might call in bursts. The detective said yes. Counsel asked if a person who gets a strange demand might call right away. He said yes. Counsel asked if the chart alone can prove a murder agreement. He said no. He said the chart is a road sign, not a verdict. The state then moved to travel. A supervisor from a federal task force took the stand. He said he pulled booking records after a related verdict in 2023. He said the records showed one-way tickets to Vietnam with a routing through another country. Proven were the bookings and the dates. He said agents met the couple at the airport and made an arrest on a warrant. The jury saw itinerary pages with names and flight numbers. The pages were already admitted. He read the dates and the destination. The prosecutor asked why travel mattered in a conspiracy case. He said travel by itself does not prove guilt. He said travel can be a fact that fits with other facts. He said a one-way ticket to a country without a treaty can carry meaning when placed next to calls, meetings, and money moves. He stopped there. He did not claim a final answer. He said the jury would decide what weight to give it. The defense stood and turned the point. Counsel asked if people travel for family and health. The witness said yes. Counsel asked if agents ever misread a plan. He said yes. Counsel asked if the pages in evidence show a return flight. He said no. Counsel asked if a one-way ticket always means flight from justice. He said no. He said it can also mean a long stay or a flexible plan. The jury wrote in their notebooks and looked up. After lunch, the state introduced a thin stack of ledgers that showed cash deposits made by a person already convicted in a related case. The detective traced deposits to time periods that matched the murder and the weeks after. He said the totals were large for that person's usual pattern. He said the spike did not repeat in later months. He said that rise and fall matters. Proven were the deposits. Allegation was that the cash came from a plan that began with a family dispute and ended with a killing. On cross, the defense asked about side jobs. He asked if cash work can leave a mark like that. The detective said it can. He asked if the person who made the deposits spoke about where the money came from. The detective said that came in through testimony earlier in other trials. The judge told the jury to use only what was admitted here. The detective adjusted. He said the numbers are the numbers. He said the jury would hear more on origins if the court allowed it later. The prosecutor returned to the idea of how strands meet. He said one strand is calls. One is cash. One is travel. One is a recorded lunch where people speak around a crisis. He asked the detective why cases like this rely on strands. The detective said people who conspire do not write minutes. He said they act in ways that can be tracked. He said the law allows a jury to look at the whole. The defense cut in on that last line. Counsel asked if the law also warns against guilt by association. The detective said yes. He agreed that a jury must keep each element clear. He agreed that a jury must not fill gaps with hunches. He agreed that a timeline that looks neat can still be wrong. He held to the view that the pattern in this case was not random. He said the pattern would survive cross. The state called one more witness on financials. A bank compliance officer explained suspicious activity reports in general terms. She did not speak about a specific report in this case. She taught the jury how banks watch for bursts and patterns. She said banks file reports based on rules, not on guilt. She said the reports feed investigations. She said agents then ask for records that show ordinary lines of numbers that a jury can weigh for itself. Cross returned to common life again. Counsel asked if cash can flow in families with small businesses. She said yes. Counsel asked if a person who gives money to friends can appear in a report. She said yes. Counsel asked if the word suspicious means criminal. She said no. It means unusual. She said unusual can be innocent. The afternoon closed with a clean, careful summary from the state's lead detective. He spoke about method. He said his team tested each strand for truth. They checked that times matched. They checked that images matched dates. They matched account holders to signatures. They reviewed chain of custody. He said the goal was to present a set of facts that a jury could trust before it drew any inference. He said the case did not rise or fall on a single item. He said it rose on how pieces aligned. The defense used its last minutes to attack the idea of alignment. Counsel said the state built a shape out of dots that could be arranged in other ways. He spoke about bias. He spoke about hindsight. He said charts can seduce a jury even when they prove only that people lived busy lives. He said families under stress make calls and move money for reasons that are not crimes. He asked the jury to hold the state to proof beyond a reasonable doubt on agreement and intent. The judge gave one more instruction before sending the jury home. He said charts help recall. He said charts do not speak. He said the meaning belongs to the jury, and only to the jury. He told them to weigh testimony about limits. He told them to keep proven facts and allegations in separate boxes until the end. The jurors nodded. The deputy led them out. The room exhaled. Counsel closed laptops. The clerk sealed the exhibits for the night. Outside, cameras waited for sound bites. Inside, the record held steady. Proven were calls and times. Proven were withdrawals, deposits, and bookings. Proven were photos of people at banks and airports on certain dates. Allegation from the state was that the lines formed one picture. Allegation from the defense was that the same lines could form another. Chapter 6, The Defense Case. 9:06 a.m., August 26, 2025. The defense rose with a short promise. This case, they said, turns on gaps. No order. No message. No recorded command. Jurors would hear about what the law actually requires and why charts, stress, and family habit are not enough to cross that line. Counsel started with the law. He read the elements of conspiracy and solicitation in plain words. There must be an agreement. There must be intent to join it. There must be an act that moves it forward. Suspicion is not an element. Family pressure is not an element. He told jurors the judge would instruct them at the end. He asked them to keep those elements in mind now, when testimony can feel like a storm. He replayed a rule the jury already knew. Opening statements are not evidence. Headlines are not evidence. Prior verdicts in other trials are context only if the judge says so. Their job is this case and this record. He asked them to return to that idea each time a witness used the word we. The jurors wrote the point in their notebooks and looked up. The first cross of the morning targeted the call charts. The detective agreed the record showed traffic, not words. He agreed a burst of calls can reflect fear. He agreed people under stress phone family first. The defense walked through tower maps and their limits. A wedge is not a pinpoint. A sector is not a doorstep. The jury took that in without debate. The numbers stayed the numbers. The meaning stayed open. The next cross pressed the bank ledgers. A compliance officer had explained withdrawals around key dates. Defense counsel did not fight the entries. Instead, he asked about routine needs. Tuition, rent, a child's camp fee, doctors. The officer agreed those needs exist and often generate cash. She agreed a pattern can be real and still be innocent. She agreed suspicious is not the same word as criminal. The state objected to the last phrasing. The judge sustained and told the jury to use their own judgment. Then the defense returned to the 2016 approach. They walked the agent through every line of his script. No threats. No demand tied to an explicit crime. $5,000 said out loud to press on a sore point and prompt calls. The agent agreed that was the design. The defense used that admission to reframe the spike that followed. Pressure created calls. Calls created charts. Charts are not a confession. They moved to the restaurant recording. An audio expert had explained enhancement. The defense thanked her for her work and then showed its limits. Expectation can color the ear. Cleaning a track raises syllables and noise together. A listener who knows the case can hear one word where another lives. The expert stood by her method, but conceded the human point. The jury watched her careful answers and wrote more notes. A linguist had taught the room how coded speech works. On cross, the defense kept him in his lane. Yes, coded talk appears in legal crises that are not criminal. Yes, fear of public shame can push people into guarded phrases. No, he could not tell the jury that a murder plan existed. He could only show patterns and tools. He said the jury must match those to facts. The defense thanked him for that sentence and sat down. The defense's first witness was a former family friend. She did not paint a soft picture. She said the defendant liked control. She said the house ran on lists. But she also said lists are not crimes. She never heard an order to harm anyone. She never saw cash change hands for violence. She saw a parent who could be blunt, and a family that fought in the open. The state used cross to test bias and distance. The witness admitted years had passed and memories can blur. She held to the line that she had never seen a plan for murder. A financial professional followed. He taught jurors the difference between ordinary liquidity and structured payments. He told them bursts happen at month ends. They happen around school fees and medical bills. He said the ledgers the jury saw could fit an illegal scheme. He also said the same numbers could fit a family juggling obligations under stress. The state asked whether coincidence can repeat on cue around trigger dates. He said it can, but less often. He told the jury his job was not to claim what happened, only to show what else could be true. On redirect, the defense tied the point back to the law. Reasonable doubt lives where two plausible explanations remain after all the evidence is in. If timelines and balances can be read more than one way, the verdict must follow the higher standard, not the louder story. The judge nodded at the clean phrasing. He told the jury again that he would provide the final instruction set when proofs ended. Midday, the defense confronted the airport facts. No one disputed the arrest happened. The itinerary showed a one-way trip to Vietnam in November 2023. The defense called a travel agent and a family acquaintance. The agent said one-way tickets can be cheaper when a return date is unknown. He said travelers buy them for long stays or to use miles later. The acquaintance spoke about health and family strain. The state, on cross, put the common point back on the table. Vietnam has no extradition treaty with the United States. The defense answered with the same simple rule. Travel is a fact. Intent is a conclusion. The jury must not collapse the two. The defense then addressed prior convictions in related cases. They did not deny them. They reminded jurors those verdicts belonged to other defendants with different proofs. They said this panel must resist shortcuts that move verdicts across the aisle just because names and families overlap. The AP's weekly recap had said the same thing in plainer words. Each box of evidence stands on its own. The jury wrote the point down again. Late afternoon brought the defense's central theme in slow, patient strokes. A family can be sharp, even harsh, without crossing into crime. A grandmother can press hard about school, moves, and money without hiring killers. Charts can rise and fall for reasons that do not appear on a screen. A coded lunch can be fear, not command. A ticket can be escape from noise, not the law. The defense did not ask the jurors to like the defendant. It asked them to guard the elements and to be stingy with the word proof. The prosecutor's cross stayed measured. He asked the travel agent whether he knew the defendant's mind on the day tickets were booked. He said no. He asked the family acquaintance whether she sat in meetings where plans were hatched. She said no. He asked the financial professional whether his model could rule out cash meant for a hit. He said it could not. The state stepped back and let those answers sit. In rebuttal, the defense returned to what was missing. No message where the defendant ordered a killing. No recording of her voice naming a price. No bank line from her account to a known intermediary. No witness who said she gave an instruction to make a man die. The defense did not argue that absence proves innocence. It argued that absence matters when the law demands an agreement, an intent, and an act that moves the plan. They asked the jury to treat absence as absence, not as a blank to be filled with feeling. They closed the day with the jury instructions again. The judge would tell them the state must prove each element beyond a reasonable doubt. The judge would tell them a verdict cannot rest on speculation. The judge would tell them to keep proven facts and allegations in separate boxes until deliberations. The defense told them to keep listening for the moment when a fact, not a frame, ties the defendant to agreement, payment, or command. If that moment never arrives, the law answers for them. The court recessed. The deputy locked the evidence cart. Outside, cameras waited at the steps. Inside, the day's record showed a narrow path the defense wanted the jury to walk. It was not a story about good people. It was a story about proof. It asked the jurors to read the same charts and hear the same clips and still see a space the law protects. The question now sat in clean terms. Has the defense planted reasonable doubt on agreement and intent, or will the state's strand still hold when the judge reads the charge and the lawyers take their last turn? Chapter 7, Closings and the Charge. The lawyers stood one last time. The judge reminded the jury that closing arguments are not evidence. They are roadmaps. The verdict must rest on testimony and exhibits. The state went first. Prosecutors walked through the chain they had promised at the start. Motive tied to a denied move south. Calls that spiked after the undercover approach. A coded lunch about money and silence. Travel booked on a one-way path after a related conviction. They said the strands fit. They said the pattern showed agreement and intent. They circled the timeline. July 2013. A divorce. July 2014. A shooting. Years later, an agent's approach and a recorded meeting in Miami. The state told jurors to look at how fear moved through the calls and meetings. They said fear came from a plan under threat, not a family under stress. They spoke about roles. They said the defendant drove decisions in the home. They said pressure to relocate shaped choices for years. They said the paper and the phone trails did not stand alone. Each one lived next to the others. The point, they said, was not a single clip or a single withdrawal. The point was alignment. They addressed what the case did not have. No direct order on tape. No message that used a blunt command. They told the jury that conspiracies rarely speak in plain words. They said the law allows intent to be proven by actions and agreement shown by coordinated steps. They asked for guilty on all counts. The defense answered with the same law in plain terms. An agreement is required. Intent to join it is required. An act that moves it forward is required. Suspicion is not enough. Family habit is not enough. If two fair readings remain when the evidence closes, the verdict must be not guilty. They returned to the charts. A spike after a staged approach proves only that people called each other. A lunch with guarded talk proves only that people feared exposure. Tower wedges do not place a person on a doorstep. Bank ledgers do not tell motives. They said the state built a shape out of dots. They said other shapes still fit the same dots. They met motive head-on. Anger and talk are not crimes. People use hard lines in emails they later regret. People push and manage family messes without crossing into violence. They said the grandmother the jury saw on the screen was sharp. They said sharp is not proof. They pointed to the missing piece. No recording of the defendant ordering a killing. No pay line from her to a hitter. No witness who heard a command. They reframed travel. A one-way ticket does not prove a flight from justice by itself. People leave return dates open. People run from noise, not the law. They asked the jury not to turn a page of dates into a final answer about intent. They told the panel that law demands more than a feeling about what a trip meant. They closed on burden and restraint. Keep proven facts and allegations in separate boxes until the end. Read the court's instructions with care. Ask whether an agreement was proven, not guessed. If the answer is no, the law sets the verdict. The judge then read the charge. The presumption of innocence stands unless the state proves guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Words like maybe, likely, and probably do not meet that standard. The jury must consider only the evidence admitted in court. They must not consider punishment. They must weigh credibility and possible bias. On conspiracy, the court gave the elements. There must be an agreement to commit first-degree murder. The defendant must have intended that the crime be carried out. An act must have been done by a member of the agreement to move the plan forward. Mere presence or knowledge is not enough. Mere association or family tie is not enough. On solicitation, the court kept it simple. The state must prove the defendant solicited or commanded another to commit first-degree murder. The request must have been made with the intent that the crime be done. Talk that vents anger is not solicitation. The jury wrote the elements down. The judge spoke about circumstantial proof. Jurors may use it, but the facts they infer must follow from proven facts and must exclude reasonable, innocent explanations. Charts help recall. They do not decide intent. Recordings help recall. They do not speak for the jury. The jurors nodded as the instruction landed. He ended with a reminder about prior cases. Other verdicts are not evidence of guilt here, unless the court admitted facts from those records for a limited purpose. This panel must decide this case on this record. The court officer took the oath from the bailiff. The exhibits were sent back in order. The door to the jury room closed on quiet. The questions on the verdict sheet were clean. Did the state prove an agreement? Did the state prove intent to join it? Did the state prove an act that moved the plan? Did the state prove a request to have the crime done? The answers would turn on how 12 people read the same dots. What exact elements, proven beyond a reasonable doubt, will the jury agree on when they mark the form?